This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Pitch, Stott scores the winning run. 7-6 Phillies. On a wild pitch that got just maybe 15 feet away, Stott came barreling down the line. Ruiz's throw is behind Finnegan. And a brutal way to walk it off.
Yeah, brutal way. Dave Jagler on the call last night for Nats Radio on 106.7 The Fan, our sister station. What was even worse was the play before. More on that coming up in a moment. Good day, everybody. Rough loss for the Nats last night. But could there be another big loss coming for the city? How premature was the RFK return of the football team celebration on Monday? Apparently, they don't have the votes as of now. 7 city council votes needed to pass what the mayor negotiated, and they don't have them yet. Barry's Verluga will join us at 12 noon to get into the details of what happens next and why the current state of the deal is a bad one for the city. Chris Miles from NBA TV will join us at 11. We had another night of wild NBA finishes, including a finish that Giannis Antetokounmpo was involved in postgame with the father of an opposing player. Parents never come out onto the floor. Fred Smoot will join us on the show today with his recap of the Skins draft. Real quickly on the Nats game, because I happen to have been watching it last night. What a rally in the ninth. Lowe with the 3-run shot after Wood had a double and brought in a run. The Nats had 4 in the top of the ninth. They went into that inning down 5-2. They left it up 6-5. Kyle Finnegan came in. It was not a pleasant ninth inning because it started with a single, then a walk. Still had an opportunity, though, with one out and Rojas up. And after a long at bat and a relatively short fly ball to right field, an excellent throw, I thought, from Dylan Cruz. Maybe some of you Nats fans would say that it was a bit off to K-Bear Ruiz. But I thought Ruiz should have pulled that throw in and tagged out the runner, which was bomb, and they didn't. And that tied the game, and the next batter was wild pitch, game over. The Nats have been competitive, though, man. They've really been competitive, and, man, they are a completely different offensive baseball team than they were last year. C.J. Abrams last night, 4-for-5. James Wood, another hit and another RBI, and then the big bomb by Lowe in the ninth, 3-run shot that gave the Nats their lead. Another one with Philadelphia tonight. I want to start the show, or at least continue the opening segment of the show, with this from Edward, because we have not had a chance to talk about this. I did talk about this yesterday on my podcast with Tommy, and there was a lot of response to it, and we can talk about it right now, because just too much of our own draft to be concerned with than the rest of it. But it comes from Edward. Edward writes, "Kevin, the NFL draft is all you said yesterday it is, especially when it comes to the unpredictability and the impossible to predict part of it. But it's a lot more than that. It's a chance for the NFL to make a statement on players and families they don't like. Shedeur Sanders and family should sue the league for what happened over the weekend. It was disgusting." Thank you, Edward. Appreciate that. You can follow me on Twitter at Kevin Sheehan DC. Tweet me. You can also go to my website, thekevinsheehanshow.com, which is my podcast website, and email me if you want. Yeah, so we haven't gotten to the Shedeur Sanders thing. It was pretty wild, you know, over the weekend. He was you know, going into the draft, you know, a couple of months ago, considered to be a lock to be a first-round pick. And then as we approached the draft, it became pretty apparent that the league's evaluation of Shedeur Sanders was not necessarily the same evaluation outside analysts and outside mock drafters were giving Shedeur Sanders. Because we went from, you know, is he potentially a top three pick with either Cleveland or the Giants picking at 2-3 after Cam Ward. And look, Cam Ward wasn't always the default number one. There was a time during this season where Shedeur Sanders was considered to be a possibility to go number one overall. And we're not talking about like the year before. The year before, Shedeur Sanders was absolutely a consensus pick to be the number one quarterback anyway, taken in the draft. Travis Hunter and Abdul Carter were always supposed to go really high in the draft, even if you look back 6 months or a year ago. This was not necessarily a Sam Howell situation where, remember, Sam Howell, the year before he came out, was predicted to be a very high draft pick, a very high first rounder. Some even had him number one overall, and he ended up going in the fifth round, if you recall. This was, you know, Shedeur Sanders kind of falling from the perch of a potential number one to then it became clear that Cam Ward would be the number one pick in the draft, which, by the way, I think made a lot of sense in terms of the first quarterback taken in the draft. And then, you know, as we got into the final weeks before the draft, you started to hear, well, the Giants and the Browns are not going to take Shedeur Sanders because Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter are, you know, kind of generational prospects, or however, you know, you want to describe them. Very, very strong draft prospects and just better, you know, surefire things than Shedeur Sanders. And then it, you know, all got focused on, oh, wow, New Orleans is going to benefit from this. They pick nine. They need a quarterback. Derek Carr is hurt. And by the way, he is hurt, and he confirmed that the other day. It'll be interesting to see what New Orleans does. They took Tyler Shook in the draft. I don't know if he'll be the starter. Or perhaps it's Spencer Rattler. I don't know. New Orleans is in a heap of trouble. You know, cap issues, you know, depth issues. They've got some good players, but Kellen Moore is going to struggle there, you would think, for a while. But anyway, then it was, well, New Orleans is like, nah, they don't want Shedeur Sanders. So then it became Pittsburgh at 21. Pittsburgh doesn't have a quarterback. Although I was reading something yesterday after the show. They like Mason Rudolph. And when I say they, the players apparently really like Mason Rudolph as their quarterback. Mason Rudolph has played in a bunch of games for the Steelers, you know, in recent years. He was actually last year not in Pittsburgh. He was in Tennessee, not in Pittsburgh. But apparently they like Mason Rudolph a lot. You know, I went back to see when Mason Rudolph was picked and what draft, because quarterbacks, man, you don't know. Geno Smith, Baker Mayfield. We've had so many examples of quarterbacks being completely counted out. Now, Mason Rudolph was not the prospect that Baker Mayfield was, who went number one overall. Mason Rudolph went in the third round of the 2018 draft to the Steelers. He is 29 years old, but he will be 30 when the season starts. But I was reading something where the Steelers are okay if they don't get Aaron Rodgers. And there's still a possibility if Rodgers decides to move on and retire that Kirk Cousins could be the Steelers' move. But in reading this story out of Pittsburgh, it was like the players love Rudolph. The coaches love Rudolph. Come on, man. You can't go into a season with Mason Rudolph as your starting quarterback, can you? I don't think you can. They drafted, by the way, the Ohio State quarterback, Will Howard. I don't think he is, you know, certainly not as a rookie. He's not going to be, I don't think, a starting quarterback. But, you know, who knows? Anyway, back to, you know, Shedeur. So the 21st pick was thought to be, well, he's not going to get by 21. You know, his over-under on draft position, odds-wise, went from 9.5, which was the New Orleans spot, for several months, to 21.5 as we approached last Thursday. which was the Steelers' position. And everybody said, look, if the Steelers don't take him, he's not going to get picked in the first round. And then it'll be unless somebody trades back into the end of the first round. That was the discussion, right? If somebody trades back into the end of the first round, fine. But if not, it's going to be at the top of the second round. You know, it's going to be, you know, Cleveland at the top of the second round because they had two picks to start the second round after they traded with Jacksonville. There was the possibility of the Saints at 40 overall in the second half, but the Steelers didn't have a second round pick. Nobody thought that he would get past the second round. People were saying a week ago today, Shedeur Sanders may not go in the first round. You know, that was a distinct possibility at that point. But anyway, the draft comes about. And Shedeur Sanders, by the way, made the decision not to show up for the draft in Green Bay because I guess he felt there was a possibility that he might not get picked in the first round, although he threw a hell of a party with his, you know, with his brand, Legendary, you know, marked all over the scene in which he was holding this draft party for the weekend last weekend. So the draft comes last week. We get one quarterback taken at number one overall, Cam Ward, expected. And then the Giants made a move into the draft. You know, one of the things that I wish I had said before the draft, because, you know, we get so much right about the draft, is that what made sense, actually, for a trade back into the first round of the draft was at pick number 25 with Houston right before the Rams picked, because the Rams were supposedly looking for the replacement, the eventual replacement for Matt Stafford. And they may have taken a quarterback at 25. And the Giants clearly thought the Rams had a chance to take a quarterback at 25, or there was a chance they were going to take a quarterback at 25. And it may have been Jackson Dart. And when the Giants traded into that spot at 25, one ahead of the Rams with Houston, you know, everybody held their collective breath. Is this where Shedeur Sanders goes? Because remember, during the offseason, Deion had said, you know, there are certain places he's not going to play. You know, they played their, you know, Archie Manning. Deion played his Archie Manning hand from back in the 2004 draft when they held Archie, when they held Eli back from going to the Chargers and they forced a trade. And so there was a lot of discussion. I'm sure most of you know a lot of the story going into it with respect to Deion, you know, suggesting that there were certain teams he was not going to allow his son to play for. You know, we were going to kind of dictate where he got picked. That kind of looks silly in hindsight. But anyway, the Giants jumped up and they took Jackson Dart in the first round, quarterback Ole Miss. And then you just started to see quarterbacks come off the board on night two. No Shedeur Sanders. Tyler Shook, second round to the Saints. Jalen Milroe, third round to the Seahawks. And then the shocker, the Cleveland Browns are going to take a quarterback late in the third round. Here we go. And they select Dillon Gabriel, who, by the way, going into this draft, was not supposed to be drafted anywhere near the third round. In fact, some, you know, analysts had an undrafted free agent grade on Dillon Gabriel. And the reason being, Dillon Gabriel is like 5'9". I will tell you this, though, about Dillon Gabriel. I'm not sure last year in college football I watched a quarterback that processed and got the ball out quicker than Dillon Gabriel. Part of that is the, you know, Oregon offense. Understood. But he is super quick processing, super quick release. And somebody, the Browns apparently, saw maybe the next Drew Brees, a left-handed version of Drew Brees. So they took Dillon Gabriel, and then night two ended and Shedeur Sanders was still on the clock. Well, he's got to get picked early in the fourth round, right? Nope. He didn't get picked until the fifth round by the Cleveland Browns after they picked Dillon Gabriel. Oh, by the way, Cleveland traded up to pick 144 to select Shedeur Sanders. So he's taken there at 144 out of a draft, by the way, that has 257 players taken. So he was in the back half of this NFL draft in the fifth round. Again, you know, how much earlier he was supposed to be taken is debatable. But it's clear as we approach the draft that the teams were on a different page than the mock drafters and some of the analysts out there. I personally think by the time we'd gotten to Thursday, there was a consensus that he might not be picked in the first round. You know, there was a media consensus, which was starting to agree with the NFL, you know, front office consensus. So, look, the Shedeur Sanders situation, in many ways, there are a lot of layers to this story. You know, Dion, you know, to what Edward wrote, collusion. I'll get to that here in a moment. You know, college players like Shedeur Sanders being massive stars at the college level and earning lots of money, you know, close to $6, $7, maybe $8 million over 2 years at Colorado. There's a lot to this story you could get into, you know, in terms of race, in terms of, you know, league and ownership and quarterbacks, etc. I just don't think it's that complex. I think there are a lot of layers that are worth, you know, going into and contemplating, and I've done that over the last several days. And to me, it's kind of easy. Shedeur Sanders just flat out was not a first-round caliber prospect, period. If you watched college football over the last 2 years, it was impossible to miss Colorado games. It started in 2023 when Colorado in Dion's first game as the coach with his son Shiloh and with Shedeur and with Travis Hunter. They opened up with TCU. What a football game that was. 45-42, Colorado beat TCU. And it was like, wow. And Shedeur was incredible. He threw 4 touchdown passes. He threw for over 500 yards. The next week, they beat up on a better defensive team in Nebraska. He wasn't as impressive. And then the third week, they went to overtime and beat Colorado State in a thriller. And you're like, this dude's pretty good. What you're really thinking, though, is, God, this Travis Hunter is ridiculous. What ended up happening, though, was TCU was not a good team that year. They were a bad defensive team. Nebraska was not a good team. Colorado State was not a good team. And they ran up against Oregon in week 4 of the 2023 season. And I'll never forget it because here's Colorado, the story of the college football season in 2023. There's no doubt. I mean, Dion and Shedeur and Shiloh and Travis Hunter had taken over the sport in the early portion of the schedule. And the calendar in September. And they had to go to Oregon, which, by the way, was a Pac-12 team that year. Oregon was a 21-point favorite. That was crazy. You're like, what? Well, the odds makers knew Colorado wasn't very good. They weren't very good at all, actually. In fact, they stunk in 2023. Bad football team in 2023. They got run completely out of the building. 42-6 was the final score. This was the game in which Oregon coach Dan Lanning afterwards said, they're playing for clicks, we're playing for wins. But let me just say, early on, as a massive college football fan, I thought Shedeur looked the part, man. He was smooth. He had a presence about him. There was a certain charisma that he's always had in terms of his personality, the way he speaks, the way he plays. It's very kind of, you know, smooth, casual. Of course, it hurts him too. But he looked good early on. And then the more and more you watched him during his college football career, as they played better teams in higher caliber competition, you realized, if you were being honest, he's just okay. And then this year, it's like, yeah, he's a backup quarterback. Denton and I had these conversations, you know, a few times during the college football season, and I said, I don't see it. Denton saw it a little bit more than me with respect to he thought Shedeur, you know, would at least be a first rounder. I'm like, this dude's a backup quarterback. Cam Ward is so much better of a prospect. That was when we were kind of debating the prospect, you know, positioning Ward or Shedeur. I just didn't think any of the quarterbacks, this was just a bad quarterback year. I'm a big Cam Ward fan. I actually think Cam Ward's got a chance to be a really good quarterback in the NFL. We'll see. Who knows? You know, we're wrong about quarterbacks two-thirds of the time. So is the league. But I said multiple times during the season, I just don't see it. I thank God we don't have to pick a quarterback this year. Thank God we're not desperate for a quarterback this year. And there were teams desperate for quarterbacks, you know, New Orleans, the Giants, the Browns, the Steelers, and they didn't see it either. You know, see, here's the thing, Edward, back to your email in which you suggest that the draft is much more than just being this, you know, crapshoot that it turns into every year, which it is. Doesn't make it any less fun to consume as a football fan. But, you know, when you said that it's a lot more than just, you know, the unpredictable, you know, impossible to predict part of it. It's a chance for the NFL to make a statement on players and families they don't like. Shedeur Sanders and family should sue the league for what happened over the weekend. It was disgusting. This was the reaction that I think anybody that was following this story saw a lot of the reaction. You know, it was collusion. It was, you know, it was Dion. It was race. It was all of these different things, you know. And then you started to hear, by the way, from a lot of the reporters, good reporters in the NFL, all of the stories coming out about how poorly he interviewed. You know, I read one of the stories that, I want to say it was Peter Schrager. It may have been somebody else. But a higher quality NFL reporter told the story about how, and we know this to be true because Mike Shanahan's told us this before, that one of the things teams do when they're interviewing quarterbacks prior to a draft to kind of gauge the kind of team player that quarterback is they'll actually put on some of the really bad plays that the quarterback had. I'll never forget Mike telling us the story on the air about the big concern. He had multiple concerns about RG3 before drafting him, and he shared those concerns with Dan and with Bruce. Number one was they were going to have to play football a completely different way because he was just not ready to be a traditional, you know, pocket passer. He just wasn't asked to do that at Baylor, and he wasn't comfortable doing that. And so it was going to take time for this quarterback to become, you know, a well-rounded quarterback. So they were going to have to play football a different way to get him on the field. So he expressed that and emphasized that with Bruce and Dan before that draft. The other thing he shared with us, I'll never forget, on the air, he said, we put on, I think it was Oklahoma State they were playing, and he had one of his worst games, and they put some of the plays on tape, and they watched him together, and he said, you know, Robert, and I think he said it was his father or somebody else who was there, they could not, you know, get to quickly enough throwing the coach, Art Briles, and the play calling under the bus. It was just one, you know, blaming of somebody else for a couple of picks, a couple of bad decisions. And he said that was a concern. And he said that, you know, when you hear that from a player, it's a concern because they haven't been able to deal with adversity and haven't, you know, been, they don't handle it naturally. And that was the message to Dan and Bruce was, number one, we're going to have to play football a completely different way, which they did. You know, they went to, you know, the pistol, and they used RG3 as a true dual threat quarterback his rookie year, which had never been done in the NFL, not to the extent to which Washington had done it. And number two, they were really concerned about what would happen and how he would handle adversity. So fast forward to this draft. All the stories are coming out about the way Shedeur, you know, interviewed, and some teams just crossed him off the list because he was an off-putting interview. But one of the specific stories was they put on some of his bad plays. A team that had a need for quarterback put on some of the bad plays, and he essentially said to the room, look, if you don't want to draft me, that's fine. There are plenty of other teams that do. Yeah, that's not the right answer. If that's true, that's not the right answer. You know, taking accountability is the right way. So, look, I think this is a story that has some interesting angles. I'm not going to deny that, you know, including the angle of having a player on the team with Deion and his presence looming over the franchise at that point. But for me, it comes down to this more than anything else. He was not a first-round prospect, period. His play indicated that. He didn't partake in a lot of the opportunities to prove in the offseason that some of the stuff they were seeing on tape wasn't him. It was more the offensive line. It was more, you know, the competition or the lack thereof. I mean, he had multiple, you know, NFL receivers on his team, including the best one in the country. But they had some offensive line issues, especially in 23, not as much in 2024. And they had a better season in 2024. But he was not a first-round prospect, okay? So let's just start there. Because all of the other stuff we can have a conversation about in terms of why he dropped to the fifth round instead of going in the second or third, which was probably more commensurate with the prospect that he was. But you have to understand that if you watch this player and you and the NFL, you know, was telling everybody basically, "Yeah, I don't think so." And we got that as we got closer to the draft. They just didn't see him as a first-round prospect because he wasn't a first-round prospect. Now, should all of those quarterbacks have been taken before him? Should we have seen, you know, here's the number. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 quarterbacks, Ward, Dart, Shook, Milroe, and Gabriel taken before Shedeur Sanders? Was he a better prospect than Dylan Gabriel? Actually, I think he probably was, but Dylan Gabriel had certain facets of his game that were clearly more advanced than Shedeur Sanders. Shedeur Sanders took way too many sacks, held onto the ball way too long, did not process quickly. I thought he had good pocket presence. He also didn't have great arm strength, and he also was not the athlete his father was. Nowhere near the athlete Cam Ward is, or obviously not the athlete Jalen Milroe is. But you start with this, and I don't think this is actually debatable. He wasn't a first-round prospect. So then you go to this. You go to, is the juice worth the squeeze? If he's a backup NFL quarterback or a low-end starter, let's just say some team saw him as maybe at some point a low-end NFL starter, is the juice worth the squeeze? It's not a direct comparison, a direct analogy to the Kaepernick situation. I think one of the things that gets overlooked in the Kaepernick situation, you know, even when you talk about it in hindsight, he was not a starting quarterback at that point in his career. Period. He was not one of the best 32. He was one of the best 64. There's no doubt that Colin Kaepernick, what are we talking about now? 8, 9 years ago, 7 years ago, 6 years ago, whatever it was not a starting quarterback, but he was definitely one of the best 64. He would have been a really solid high-level backup quarterback. But was it worth it? Was the circus that came with Kaepernick, which, by the way, also included, and this is where it's different than Shedeur, you know, that came with business impact. Like, there were people that were boycotting the NFL to a certain degree, and imagine the team that had Kaepernick on it, they would have gone nuts because they felt that he was not patriotic. We don't need to go down that argument. It's not about that. It's about comparing it to Shedeur. The juice wasn't worth the squeeze to bring the media, have it descend on your team, have many of your customers say, bad, bad team. I'm not spending money on your team anymore for a guy that was going to be your backup. Shedeur Sanders, different reasons, same thing. Was the juice worth it to bring Shedeur Sanders onto your team when you saw him as a low-end starter or a backup in this league when you were going to have, A, a kid that seemed entitled, at least according to the reports, seemed to lack much self-awareness at all with respect to, you know, how he handled his interviews, didn't interview well. Look, when you are, you know, a draft prospect and you go through these interviews, it's just like a job interview. Okay? You're not dictating to them. Now, sometimes you're in position to do that. He wasn't. There clearly was a detached sort of reality for the Sanders in terms of the prospect that they thought he was, he thought he was, and the way the NFL viewed him. So you got into the second round, and it's like, are we going to take this on? And then, by the way, have Deion hovering. By the way, I like Deion. Just as an aside, I've always liked Deion. I love Deion as a player. I like Deion as a coach. Deion's straight old school. It's actually surprising that some of the things that came out with him saying outwardly, yeah, we're not going to let him play for that team. You know, he didn't say it specifically about Cleveland, but there's that one interview where he's like, yeah, Cleveland, no, we would really like the Giants. But he talked about, you know, pulling the Archie Manning, you know, move. By the way, those that think that Archie Manning skated free during that whole time, you've got a terrible memory. He was lit up. People were furious with the Mannings and what they pulled back then. But, you know, we didn't have social media. It was a different media landscape. But you get to teams wondering, is it worth it? Is it worth it to bring him on? Finally, Cleveland said fifth rounder, because you know what, as a fifth rounder versus a second rounder, if it doesn't work out, and by the way, there's no guarantee it will, they can cut him. I mean, they don't have much invested in him. There were better players with less noise in the earlier rounds. I was surprised they took Dylan Gabriel and then traded back for Shedeur Sanders. But look, all you got to do is, if you really believe it's collusion, I mean, that is way out there. This league is about winning football games. Cam Newton, his stock was dropping big time before the 2011 draft. Cam Newton was thought to be arrogant, entitled, going to be a difficult teammate. There were people questioning how bright he was and how capable he was from an intellect standpoint to play the position. Remember, he had taken the money to go to Auburn, which was illegal back then. And there were a lot of teams, you know, basically in a lot of reporting, Cam could drop big time, but he didn't. You know why? Because he legitimate first-round prospect. He was a legitimate first player in the draft prospect, and that's where Carolina picked him. How about a year ago, Caleb Williams? How about all the stuff about Caleb Williams throughout that spring? Remember, initially it was, we may pull, you know, a Manning kind of thing and dictate where we want to go. You know, there was a lot of that. The equity. Remember them discussing, you know, that maybe Caleb Williams would be the first player to receive, as part of his compensation structure, equity in the team? There was a lot going around about Caleb Williams. What happened? Too much talent. Too good of a prospect as a football player. Pick number one overall. That's not what Shedeur Sanders was. He was not a first-round prospect. And then it became about, is this really worth it to bring the circus to town by taking him and putting him on our team as a backup quarterback and maybe one day as a low-end starter? Now, the good news for him is he got picked. He's going to go to a team that does not have a definitive starter at this point. I mean, the Browns, they've got 40-year-old Joe Flacco. They've got Dylan Gabriel, who they picked. They got Deshaun Watson, whose career clearly seems to be over. They've got Kenny Pickett. Like, he's got a chance to go in and completely change the narrative on him personally, the surrounding cast, and him as a player. There's an opportunity to compete for a starting job in Cleveland. So for a young person who, by the way, has made a lot of money in his, you know, very young life so far playing football in college, you'd love to see kind of a total turn on the narrative. I think the chances are almost 50-50. He either ends up being an NFL quarterback at some level, or the Browns could move on from him before the season even starts. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Your thoughts on Shedeur Sanders dropping to the fifth round. Why did it happen? We'll take calls on that. 11 a.m., we'll talk some NBA with Chris Miles. We'll get into this stadium issue with Barry Zwerluga at 12, and we'll definitely talk some draft, Skins draft, with Fred Smoot next hour as well. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're streaming live 10 to 1 every day on Team 980's YouTube page. Hit the subscribe button and hit the like thumbs up for us if you don't mind.